Hello and welcome to the Podcast Festival podcast. My name is Lieven Heremans and I'm one of the organizers of this festival that takes place annually and is an initiative from the Dutch Podcast Network. The 2020 edition was the third edition, and for the first time the program included a conference day. In this podcast feed, we will publish a selection of the sessions from the conference. This episode contains the session Hot Topics in Industry, which features a conversation with Arsley Carmen, senior reporter at The Verge, and Nolika Redway from Domino Sounds. It was part of the Claiming Space track, which was co-curated by Domino Sounds.
Can you say hi now?
Hello.
Oh, yay!
Great. I was like, I hope it's on my microphone.
No. We're just freaking out. Hi, Ashley.
Hi.
So we just finished having this amazing session where we got to talk to Josh Rivers. I think you can see in our camera where we are. And we're kind of going to switch gears a little bit to open up the conversation and talk about, all that's hot and interesting around podcasting. I do feel like you're the expert in your own way, and we know things too. But I'm really excited to talk with you. And before we begin, can you tell the people a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I'm a reporter at a website called The Verge, and I've been covering the podcast business for probably like 3 years now, which is funny because when I started, I was just like, oh, this is kind of an interesting place to be. And now, since then, Spotify has gotten into the field. We're seeing Apple kind of starting to maybe take things more seriously. Amazon, Sirius, everything has happened. I was looking over this past summer and I was like, whoa, it has been a time. So yeah, that's the majority of what I do.
I mean, I think it's so amazing. I mean, I have my first question for you. I have lots of questions, but my first question for you is, what made you decide to cover that beat? Because like now I imagine every media news organization has to have someone that's covering, I would hope, the podcast like industry and what's happening in podcasting. But 3 years ago when you started, I mean, newsletters were, you know, like people might have a blog about it or something like that. So why? Like, how did you know?
So actually my first piece about the podcasting business was NPR's RAD technology, which was kind of like a way to track. I don't know if they're still doing this. I actually have not checked back in the years since, but at the time, that was their solution to being able to track whether people listen to ads. So they wanted people to put basically some code into their show. And that way they could figure out, okay, did someone listen to this ad? How effective is it? Things like that. So an editor just randomly dropped it to me. It was like, hey, this seems kind of interesting and wonky and like right up our alley if you're interested. Mm-hmm. I figured I'd try it. Why not? And I loved media reporting. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's like about reporting on podcasting. I was like, this is really fun and interesting to me. And to your point about other publications having a dedicated podcast reporter, it's really shocked me how few. I actually don't think I know of one. Like, obviously.
Really?
Yeah, I know. Obviously, Nick has his newsletter. Mm-hmm. Pod News exists. There's tons of different newsletters, but mm-hmm. I don't know of like a big time publication that has a dedicated podcast reporter who covers the industry. There's reviewers at the New Yorker.
Yeah.
New York Times does some reviews. Vulture just brought Nick on to do reviews, but mm-hmm. I don't know of any big publications that are covering the industry. And that shocked me.
I find it shocking too, because there's so many articles written mm-hmm. now about the podcast industry and all of these major conglomerates and organizations that are like have now a podcast. Like literally every media company, it seems, has their feet in the podcast waters.
Yeah.
And so it's really interesting that there are not enough like more people thinking about it. And what I really appreciate about you, Ashley, is that as a white woman, we're always talking about race over here. As these
let's put it out there.
Have really been willing to engage this industry and the conversation through the lens of like how the industry is kind of perpetrating the same oppressions and systems that have functioned in other spaces. And so we want to get into it. And something that we're talking about here and thinking about a lot is how independent podcasters work with, in some cases, for larger organizations. and something particular that I don't like, we were just talking with Josh, who was talking about his podcast, Busy Being Black, around it being hard work, right? Like, it's like something that you're doing. And I think many podcasters, especially independent podcasters, you do this because it is part of you that you're putting out in the world. And then from there, someone else, if they funded that podcast, owns that IP, that intellectual property. So it could be literally like you, you know, like your intellectual being that is owned by someone else. So if you can tell us a little bit, for those of us who don't know, what, I guess starting with, what interests you about the idea of how IP functioned in the podcast industry?
Yeah, so we've really seen this topic specifically come up this summer, especially as it relates to race, because a lot of Black creators and just people of color in general, but a lot of Black creators are speaking up about their deals that they received. And what's interesting to me about IP is just specifically with podcasting, because I think people got burned in other industries. You know, we've seen this specifically in music. It's a topic like Taylor Swift, Kanye's out here talking about his deals. Like, people have been burned in the past when it comes to IP deals. And podcasting seemed like this chill little space where everyone got to be themselves and talk about whatever they wanted to talk about. And these nice people let us put our shows out there. But now we're starting to see what happens when money comes into the space and really things are taken more seriously. And that just interests me so much, because it feels like maybe we're going to see change in this industry much faster than we did in other industries. And we can get into it, but I'm also interested in how unions start to play into this too, because podcasting unions are becoming pretty popular as well. Basically every entity at Spotify is unionized or trying to unionize. So I'm curious how that is going to come into play as well.
Oh, I mean, me too. I mean, like, I am also, and so how have you seen IP, like, what is the relationship between individual podcasters and their IP and the companies that own it?
Yeah. So again, this really kind of came under the magnifying glass this summer. I wrote a piece about The Nod, which is a popular show that was originally from Gimlet Media and now is owned by Spotify, of course. And the two hosts there, Brittany and Eric, really went public on Twitter talking about how they built this show, right? Exactly what you were talking about. It's like their personalities, their takes on the world, what they deem important, and by everything they consider their audience that they built. So they have this show and they love it. And now Spotify effectively owns it. So if right now they're doing a Quibi show under the Nod name, which Spotify negotiated for them. But if they wanted to put out a book, for example, that's just like anything, the Nod's thoughts on blank, they couldn't do that. They could publish it under their name. They could publish it under a different show name. They can't publish it under the Nod name. And this issue has just blown up because of RSS feeds, which is super, super nerdy. Mm-hmm. And I feel like whenever you hear the word RSS, you're like, oh God, why? But everyone in the podcasting field wants to own their RSS feed. And so because Spotify and Gimlet own the RSS feed, they effectively own the Nod's audience, because that's the best way you talk to your audience. If you want to launch a new show, if Brittany and Eric want to go out and launch a book, the best way to tell people about that is by putting out an episode, putting out a little thing that's just like, hey, you're our listeners, come check this thing out. And if you don't own your RSS feed, you can't use that channel, which is your biggest, most important channel. So we're seeing a lot of backlash around that. And the same thing happened with Joe Budden too, which a little bit different because he's, you know, a bigger player, but we can talk about that as well if you want.
I mean, we want to talk about all the things. but I wonder, something that I like in your article and like things that you've covered is with the Nod particularly, they talked about how, you know, they have to ask permission before they put anything out or before they even like, and what that must feel like as a creator, but also like as a Black person to then go beg this like big white corporation to talk to your audience. And something that was like, there was responses from, I mean, Gimlet, I gotta say, that is a messy, messy place. Like something, you know, like there's a way that before Gimlet became part of Spotify, they were, the quality of their audio was really high. The content that they put out felt really creator and audience centered. And like, you know, we're really working to do this different thing. And now that they've like, you know, the truth is coming out in the wash and money is like in the mix, a lot of their, a lot of things around race and how different people, different creators are being treated differently is like coming to the surface. And so, I mean, I guess my first question, like one, another question, Ashley, because you know, who's not fucked up? Like who, like, is there any like spaces where, I mean, outside of independent podcasting, where there are larger organizations that are really trying to do it differently, like trying not to use that same kind of Motown model, I don't know a better way of putting it, where you have this black creative and like you say, I'm going to, you know, buy you the Cadillac and I'm going to make sure you can go on tour, but I own all your masters. I own all of your shit. So like your grandchildren are still going to be hungry. You know, like that kind of residual 100%. Being able to eat off of what you've done is not an option for you. Cause they have to know. Yeah. That's the part that's frustrating to me. And I think other creators, like they read history books. They know this, they know what they're doing. It's not like, oh, I don't know that I'm hurting you. Like they have to know what they're doing.
I wanted to also respond to your point about not all creators being treated equally, because mm-hmm. I think this kind of builds off of what we were just speaking about, which mm-hmm. is, you know, part of this Nod story that I didn't mention is that, you know, Eric and Brittany were saying, okay, if this is how the industry's run, that's shitty. We didn't have power when we first started because we were just, you know, new creators. And the company, in their opinion, took advantage of that and gave them a crappy deal. But they're like, there were other people at Gimlet who received way better deals. And so mm-hmm. when Gimlet was bought, maybe they cashed out a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think that's also where we see these sort of dynamics coming into play, which is, you know, people of color might are put at potentially a bigger disadvantage when it comes to the power dynamics. Mm-hmm. And two, not everybody's treated equally. Mm-hmm. You know, Kim Kardashian's not coming in and getting a shitty deal mm-hmm. for Spotify. So yeah. I just wanted to make that point too, because I do think it, like you mentioned,
absolutely.
It
and
it's worth amplifying.
Absolutely.
As far as companies that are kind of innovating, you know, for that piece, I actually spoke to one woman, who Juleka Williams, and she mentioned that at her company, which she's a person of color as well, mm-hmm. she tries to do something where she'll front the upfront costs to start a show, mm-hmm. and the creator can buy her out if they want to leave, or as soon as she recoups those costs, then they start to rev share. So yeah. if they get a movie deal, they split it. If they, you know, sell ads, they split it. She's trying to make it a little bit more equitable in that sense, because she also views it as, why wouldn't I want to encourage people to make a good show? If you know you're going to cash out by making a good show, because you're just going to keep getting more ad revenue, movie deals, whatever you think you're going to get, she's like, why wouldn't I want to encourage that? As long as she makes her money back first, she's like, I'm happy. We can all win together. So she's just one person I spoke with who is really thinking about this in a different way. And there's a bunch of other like independent collectives that are thinking about these things. But the big networks, as far as if you're an independent, tiny guy, you're not really going to get that good deal. Again, mm-hmm. if Kim Kardashian comes into Spotify, she's rev sharing, I'm sure. Joe Rogan, he's rev sharing, I'm sure. Like, he's not getting a deal that's like, oh, Spotify owns all my IP.
So do you have any advice for independent podcasters that are thinking or being offered, right? Because something I also is in my mind is, as all of these companies are starting podcast wings, where are they going to get all this content? You know, like you need independent podcasters who are coming up with ideas and like helping to grow your, like if you, you know, Amazon podcast, you got to have podcast, you know, like you have to have something there. So is there any advice or things that people who are considering partnering or being acquired by a larger company should keep in mind?
Well, I'm not a lawyer, mm-hmm. so I cannot give legal advice, but I would say maybe you should have a lawyer yeah. look over your contracts. Mm-hmm. The more I report on this industry, regardless of medium, like if you're a writer, if you're a screenwriter, whatever, no matter what you're doing, I'm just like, you know what? It might be good to have a lawyer look over a contract and try to negotiate. You might not be able to get a good deal. It seems entirely possible that, you know, let's say Spotify is a massive company. They could say, hell no, good luck with your show. Could happen. But if I was trying to shop a show around, I would definitely consider a lawyer looking over my contract and also trying to get the best deal that I can.
That makes a lot of sense. This is a question I've had too. So Spotify, you know, stream shows. And if you are an independent podcaster that has your podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or any of these shows outside of if it's being, there's ads being run on it by, like, if you're with, I don't know, Acast, and then they are mid-roll and they're running ads on it. But, like, do you get any revenue from Spotify or from Apple Podcasts from the streams of your show?
Yeah, this is this came up actually when Joe Budden. So Joe Budden, one of the original exclusive shows for Spotify, basically kind of went off on Spotify a few weeks ago now, I believe it was, mm-hmm. saying how he wants to leave the network because he's not treated well there. He's not getting fair deals. Basically exactly what we talked about. But one thing that he specifically mentions, because he's a hip hop commentator, so he knows the music industry, mm-hmm. is how there's already a price set for music streams, right? I don't know the exact price, but you get paid a certain amount per stream.
Podcast. Wait, what is it called? 0.004 cents. Okay.
There you go.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
But he's saying, you know, that price is set. Mm-hmm. Streams for podcasts, that price is not set across the board.
Oh.
And no, and this is why Spotify, I mean, they haven't said this, mm-hmm. I don't think explicitly, but like we can all assume. This is why Spotify got into podcasting is mm-hmm. because if they can convince you to listen to 6 hours of a podcast versus 6 hours of music, that's 6 hours they don't have to pay to a musician.
Interesting.
This is a much cheaper revenue model for them because especially if you're listening to Spotify shows that they sell ads for, because then they're not paying out money to the musicians or podcasters in this case. If it's a Spotify show, they're making money because you're listening to the ads that they sell, and they do get paid per listen based on, you know, per 1,000 listeners. That's how ads are sold. Mm-hmm. And if you're a premium subscriber, they're making that money on your subscription revenue because they also put ads in premium users' podcasts.
So what is that?
All around, this is like money, 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 all the way.
That is the most upsetting thing. I gotta just say, that is one of the more upsetting things. I know it might be petty, but if you're paying for a subscription and you still have to listen to ads, Hulu does the same thing. I'm not here for it.
It's not petty. It's not petty. I mean, that was when I first heard about this technology, I asked them, I was like, wait, I literally had to do double take. I was like, this ads are still in premium users shows. And they're like, yeah, because everyone's used to hearing ads in podcasts. So
is that what they said?
But you can see how, yeah, like this is not established right now. Mm-hmm. The podcasting ecosystem has totally been free, you know, up until now, where if you just listen to a show on Apple and it, regardless of who sells your ad money, Apple's not paying you. You're just like getting access to the audience there. Mm-hmm. And you can make money off of your own ads through, like you mentioned, mid-roll, Acast, whatever. So yeah, this is all a long way to say, no, we haven't solved this issue yet.
Yeah. Is there any kind of legal or any kind of like industry changes happening or people fighting to like shift that?
So not on the person, because basically like, no, not really.
Yeah.
Like the deal conversation sort of brings us there because mm-hmm. if you owned your show and you rev shared on the ads, yes, you're not being paid like technically per stream, like mm-hmm. not literally one for one from Spotify, mm-hmm. but you're getting paid based on those listeners from the person who's buying ads from you.
Got it.
So if you owned that show, you'd be rev sharing. And mm-hmm. like, that's kind of the discussion where we're going now. It's like, mm-hmm. I want to own part of my show so I can have some of this ad revenue. Mm-hmm.
And can you find your listeners outside of these platforms?
You mean like...
Like before people use like SoundCloud or something like that? Probably not.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing is if Spotify is able to convert a wide majority of the world to being Spotify users, then you're going to want to be on Spotify.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So my background is Spotify. So I really appreciate the honesty. Full disclosure, I left because I also wanted to change the ecosystem in a way that it was more fairer for creators. So we're one of the first podcast platforms that have a creator-centric business model, which means 50-50 revenue share, but also shared IP, or in most cases, actually the IP belongs to the creators. But there's always discussion possible, and we do want to play fair in a way that, yeah, you're the creator, so content should be owned by the creator. But in addition to that, we are also finding opportunities to basically create a creator flywheel, where on one hand we are still small, right? We're growing. We do grow significantly, but we feel that creators, like having a great social media presence, can help us in using or helping accelerate that journey. So for every user they generate, we give them a kickback. And that, in that way, we help each other with driving users and driving revenue. I might be biased, right? Because I work for them, but I really feel this is the first step of changing the ecosystem.
I think it's always really helpful that there are people that are thinking about it, right? Like, it's not that it's not possible. It's just that there's the people in power don't have any reason or desire to do it. You know what I mean? Like, of course, there's so many different ways to do it that more people can benefit, but it's like wanting to do it. So I appreciate that you're doing that. Thank you. So does anybody else have questions about this? So then you have this new other thing that you introduced me to, Ashley, that you don't know, because why would you know that? But this idea of copycat podcasts. Mm-hmm. I did not even know this was a thing. I just want to say, how naive am I? I did not even know this was a thing. Did you guys know this was a thing? Copycat podcast? Oh, look at this. So for me and other people, because I try to Google, I try to get a deeper understanding. What is a copycat podcast?
So the reason that you probably wouldn't immediately think this existed is kind of exactly what we just talked about, which is, there's really no incentive to steal a podcast up until recently, right? Because yes, you could sell ads against audio that you didn't make, but if the ads are baked in, like, you're not making, you know, like, there's just a bunch of stuff where it's like, this is a way of saying, like, for example, on YouTube, you can automatically get ads inserted on videos. So if I rip off Jurassic Park and put it on YouTube, this is not possible right now. Obviously, YouTube has figured their shit out. But if you put Jurassic Park on YouTube and people watch it, you can monetize it through Google's ad technology. So the more people that watch it, you're going to make money off of it. So that's incentive for you to put stuff on YouTube, right? You want to make money. So Anchor is a company that Spotify now owns. They started out independent. And Anchor kind of is sort of building, in a way, the YouTube of podcasting, which is, it's a creation tool, so you can record from Anchor. It's really easy. You can use your phone. It's like anyone can use it. Very simple. But what they've really revolutionized is this idea that you can basically, one, check a box to have your show sent to Apple, Spotify, wherever else they work with. You can have it sent off, so it's really easy distribution. And two, they have monetization tools where you can, again, kind of check a box and be like, hey, I want to monetize this show, meaning they'll put ads in the show. You have to read them. They do it as like a host read, but they'll put these ads in the show and pay you based on how many listeners you get. So here is kind of that incentive again. And so what's happened on Anchor, and Anchor says it's not that many shows, but what they've seen is basically an attack where people rip the audio from very popular shows like Serial, for example, or the Ezra Klein Show.
Okay.
And manually upload that audio to Anchor, kind of claiming it as their own, right? Okay. So they'll name the show the same name, they'll fill in metadata, whatever, and then they'll monetize it. And so the idea is that if you're someone who, the Ezra Klein Show is massively popular, if you're someone who would search for the Ezra Klein Show, it's possible that in Apple, Overcast, maybe even in Spotify and in the Anchor app, you could listen to the copycat show instead of the actual Ezra Klein Show, meaning that person could get paid based on how many people fall for that.
And you just find it as a listener, you might just bump into that by accident.
Yeah, what ended up happening with the story is some of the creators tweeted. The CEO of Barstool Sports tweeted that there were Call Her Daddy ripoffs. Aaron Mankey from iHeart tweeted that there was a copycat of his newest show. So once they tweeted, Anchor took action and took those shows down. It was more difficult for me to find them. So It's tough for me to say how high up they were populating, how easily you could have been duped. But the simple fact is that these shows did exist. There was the incentive to create these shows because of this new world that Anchor's kind of created. And now it's on Anchor to really, and they say they're doing this, but to really figure out how to prevent this from happening again. I mean, YouTube's gone through the same thing. Mm-hmm. They've had to really work on their technology. Mm-hmm. It's something that we easily could have seen happen because the incentives are there. Mm-hmm. When there's money on the line, incentives are there.
Absolutely. I mean, it's also... you know, the big boys are getting eaten, you know, like you've been monetized so much, like you're making so much money that now other people feel like they can eat off of your content because it's grown so big. Do you remember before the time before the monetization of podcasts?
No.
Yeah, that's it. No. Did that happen before? To me, it's so interesting because when I think a lot of people get into podcasting or think about doing a podcast independently, there isn't, you know, for the creator, it can be really hard to understand how can you live, like how can you make a living off of a podcast? You know, like there are all these people who are figuring out how to monetize and make lots of money off of podcasts, but for the individual creator, we've been talking a lot about this here. Like we're in Amsterdam and in, you know, Europe. And I think there is a way that there's some social services, like social safety nets that are in place that allow for creators to be able to make do these sorts of work, this sort of work and still live. Like maybe not extravagantly, but you could do this, whether because your work-life balance is better, so you could do this, or because it's just you can fund your podcast through grants or through the government and different types of things. But in the U.S., I think it's very different. Like, it's a very different culture around podcasting. And so is it possible, like, as you've seen the industry and how it functions, for independent podcasters to... first of all, make a living off of their podcast?
Yeah, I've seen it. There are shows that are funded through Patreon or workout deals where maybe they just, use mid-roll or something to sell ads for their show, but they're still independent. Mm-hmm. I think it is doable, but it's hard because, again, shows are usually, for ads at least, are sold on a cost per 1,000 listeners. So you have to have a solid listener base to start making some real money. Mm-hmm. Patreon obviously offers some more interesting options because, of course, you're getting paid just to create, which is really, really cool. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of times it's really, especially now that there's so many podcasts, I think it's hard to break through the noise. Mm-hmm. And part of the way to break through the noise is marketing, and that requires money. Mm-hmm. And that's something that independent creators, like you mentioned, probably don't have that much of to spare for, you know, taking out Subway ads. You know, there are ways to do it. I just think going forward, and this is something I do worry about going forward, I think it might be more difficult. You know, it sounds like Europe is fun. So maybe in Europe it'll be good. But in the US, I do worry that it might be even more difficult to make it as an independent creator in some ways.
Does anybody have any questions about the copycat situation? Do you feel like Patreon is another place that I find really interesting? Because at first glance, it seems very, what's the right word I want to say? I want to say it seems like something that's really creator driven, you know, like there's a way in which there's a way for you to have direct connection to your listeners and for your listeners to feel like they are directly paying for the content that you're producing, like getting rid of the middleman in some ways. But I know as a podcaster myself that there is like Patreon too is trying to monetize in a way. And like, there is a way of like, there is a push. You don't have to, but there is definitely a suggestion to put more things behind paywalls, like make more content just for your patrons as a way of increasing people's willingness to participate and like to do that. And I wonder around like GoFundMe and other kind of direct, you know, need versus, I don't know, giver, you know, can like these platforms. And what you start to realize is like, these are also profit-driven industries and organization, like charity is a business. And I wonder what you're finding in Patreon around, is it becoming more monetized, like more about monetizing podcasts? Or is it, or somewhere in between, or is it still something that is really supportive of, because you mentioned it's one of those places where you find some podcasters are able to make a living due to their Patreon. But I'm wondering about, like, is there any of Ashley antennas going up around Patreon? That's my question. Like, are your antennas going up at all around this platform?
Yeah. So, I mean, of course, Patreon's entire pitch is come to us, we'll help you become a self-supported creator. And the way to do that is by monetizing more, or at least putting out more behind a paywall, incentivizing people to create. I believe, and I don't cover Patreon super closely, but I recall they kind of did their own creator fund as well. And like that's something that is interesting to watch as well, because a lot of these different platforms, I mean, even unrelated to podcasts, like, actually in podcasts, there's programs where they try to bring on independent creators. Like I know Google did one with PRX. Spotify has definitely done a lot of outreach for independent shows. And that's sort of like Anchor is their solution for that. There's other reasons to do this, right? So like for Anchor or Spotify reaching out, it builds their catalog. Okay. So like, it's incentive for them is like, we want a bigger catalog. So if you are the one that makes it big, you're in our catalog. Mm-hmm. But you know, you see these platforms try to encourage people to create more because they want good creators on their platform. So it's interesting because like I do think of course these platforms all have incentive to want people to monetize more. They want to make sure they're making their cut. Of course. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think they know that they need to support the community, because if they don't, there's a million other places they could probably go to.
Mm-hmm. I have one last question. And if anyone else has another, is Luminary over? I mean, I know they're not over because someone's still giving them money, but like, what's going on over there?
I wish I knew. I haven't heard great things. But they are seemingly still in operations. Yeah. So
those things always find, I find that stuff like that always like makes me so curious. Cause I'm like, maybe I've watched too much like Scandal or like, you know, House of Cards. I'm like, what's going on behind the scenes? What's the bigger plan? Ashley, thank you so much for, first of all, she woke up at 8 o'clock this morning in order to be here with us. We are so incredibly grateful. You're like, we would never know. You're just like, Chipper, and like, it's, I don't know, 1 o'clock in the afternoon where we are. So we really appreciate that you came, that you woke up early to spend this morning with us and all that you shared. So thank you, and have
Thanks
a wonderful rest
great,
of your
so yay. I wish I was in Amsterdam.
Next time. Hopefully, I hope you're well. And every time I speak to someone in the US, I was like, I can't even fully imagine, but we are thinking of you and happy you could be here with us this morning.
Awesome. All Thanks, right. y'all. Well, have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Podcast Festival 2020 is an initiative from the Dutch Podcast Network and made possible by the Creative Industries Fund NL, the Democracy and Media Foundation, the Dutch Journalism Fund, the Dutch National Fund for the Visually Impaired, and the Dutch Catholic Fund for the Visually Impaired, the Dutch Institute for Sound and Vision, Hindenburg, Topcast Media, and in cooperation with Tolhuistuin, Domino Sound, Potgrond, Wintertuin de Nieuwe Oost, Radio Dakhaas, One World Magazine, VPRO Gids, Podnieuws, Dag en Nacht Media, Women Inc. and Riverside.fm. The tune was programmed by Hai Krane. Go to podcastfestival.nl to listen back to more sessions from the festival.